What kind of a parent is Osama bin Laden? We know what his mind is like, don't we? Up next, we'll be talking with author Gene Sasson about Osama bin Laden through the eyes of one of his sons. He had up to 20 children, and from one of his wives, he had many of those too. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. Let me tell you about our guest. Gene Sasson began a lifetime of adventures and travel when she traveled abroad to work at the King Faisal Specialist Hospital and Research Center in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. After working at the hospital for 4 years, she resigned but remained in the kingdom, living in a Saudi neighborhood for an additional 8 years. During her time in Saudi Arabia, Gene came to know many Saudi citizens, including members of the royal family. In her latest book, Growing Up Bin Laden, is the first book coming from Osama's intimate family circle, his first wife, his fourth-born son. Here's Gene Sasson. Gene, welcome to the program. Good morning to you.
Well, thank you. Good morning to you, too. It's great to be here.
You sound up and chipper and ready to go here.
Absolutely.
Well, that's super. Tell me a little bit more about your experience in Saudi Arabia. A fascinating place.
Well, it really was, because it's such a complex culture. But I found the people to be lovely and welcoming. I hear that it's quite different now. Things have changed a lot over the years. But when I went there, it was a very different place. As far as modernization, there wasn't too much of that, but the people were still friendly. And I was right there on the cusp when the kingdom was really coming into its own as far as getting better medical care, schools, that sort of thing. So everyone had a great sense of anticipation that things were going to get better for the women of Saudi Arabia, who lived under quite a few restrictive rules, as everyone knows, after the first Gulf War. Then it became more common knowledge. But it was a very interesting time, and I felt myself somewhere where there was great change coming, and that's always exciting.
I remember reading the book years ago, The House of Saud, and fascinated just the way the kingdom was established, the push for oil, and you were there during its relative infancy as well, weren't you?
Absolutely, because it had really just got going under King Faisal, who unfortunately was assassinated in 73, and I went there not long after that period, and everyone was, you know, really branching out and very, very welcoming, and I used to be thanked. People would say, thank you for coming to our country and helping us, because the women, of course, could not work at that time. There were a few token Saudi women working, but not many. So it was really just such an exciting time in Saudi Arabia, and they loved us then, and that was a great feeling.
You've got an extensive background in writing, and you've written a lot of books on the Saudi family and some of the princesses and those folks there. Tell me, how did you come to write this book on Osama bin Laden with the wife and the son?
Well, it was a big shock. I received an email, and it said it was from the son of Osama bin Laden. This was in February 2008. And I saw there was an Egyptian telephone number, said, please call me. I would like for you to do my life story. And actually, to tell you the truth, I thought it was a crank call. Because I get a lot of crank messages like that, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
But I picked up the phone and called, and a very soft-spoken young man came on the line, and we started talking, and he said that he wanted his story told. And frankly, I really couldn't believe it. If you want to know the truth, I never expected to be contacted by any close family members of Osama bin Laden. But Omar had heard about me. He knew about my books about a princess in the Saudi royal family. He said he had heard that I was a person who could be trusted, and he wanted me to be the one to tell their story. And we went back and forth like that for a while, and I had him to fax me his passport information, because I certainly wanted to make sure I was speaking with who he said he was. And as the time went on, I told him, I said, well, you know, I'm known for stories about women in the Middle East, all of my stories about women and their struggles. And after that, I received a unexpected letter from his mother, Najwa, that was in Arabic, and I certainly didn't know what it said. I sent it off to a dear friend that I could trust to translate it for me, and Najwa was telling me about her wonderful son, her most sensitive son, her son who loved animals, who hated violence, a son who had left his father, and the son that she depended on the most, is what she said. And then I told Omar, I said, listen, you know, if your mom will join in with us, I'd love to do this book, but okay. I need it to be about a woman too.
Sure.
And I was shocked when she said yes, because never did I expect. It's very difficult for females in Saudi Arabia to come out and speak publicly. Even my princess, who's one of the bravest women I know, and also a very strong, forceful woman, even with her, I had to use another name. She had to remain anonymous.
Jean, did you meet them up front, or was it via just phone and email?
Well, actually, Omar kept begging me to go to Egypt. He felt that it was important, but once this got started, the publisher, everyone was really in a rush, and I said, listen, because we managed within a very short period to have such a wonderful rapport until I did it with email, telephone, and with Najwa, it had to all be translated. I would send her the questions via fax. We had to get her a fax machine because she did not have a computer at that time, and I had to send my questions to a friend, my translator, to take my English questions, put them into Arabic. I would fax them to Najwa because I didn't want her answers to come through her son, because so many times women in that culture will be more or less the son or the father or whatever will have a lot of influence on how they will answer. So I wanted her to feel very comfortable that her answers were not going through someone in her family, even though Omar is very relaxed, very different than, say, if Osama had been looking at the answers. And then she would send them to me in Arabic. She would call me. She could speak a little English, and Nashville would call and say, Jean, Nashville here, fax. And that was the signal for me to get my fax on. And then she would send me the answers in Arabic. Then I would send them to my friend in Lebanon. It was, you know, quite a around-the-world sort of interview situation. But it was, and sometimes I would have my friend Joanna. I wrote a book about a Kurdish woman, and I had a friend who would call her, and the three of us would get on the phone, and I would be able to ask her questions directly.
What did, and we'll talk about Najwa as the wife, Omar as the son. What did Najwa think of Osama bin Laden as a husband?
She said that she loved him.
Even at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
That was shocking for me, because I could tell that Najwa, from the very beginning, she said, I will not talk about my husband's militant activities, because I did not know about them. I lived in Perda. I lived in isolation. My husband did not talk to me about his political and militant activities. But Omar talked about them. So I was able, and Omar, once he became a teenager, he became so much closer to his father. But Najwa, I could tell that she either respected him still highly or feared him.
Do they both believe he's still alive?
100%.
And I assume the border there between Afghanistan and Pakistan?
After this book came out, and I heard that there was an audio that Osama had brought out about, and he was speaking about Jimmy Carter and Jimmy Carter's book on the Palestinian issue. Mm-hmm. And he said that Jimmy Carter was the only one who got it right. And I called Najwa. She was in Syria, and Omar happened to be there too. And I told Omar, I said, listen, your father's giving book reviews.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he laughed, and he told his mother in Arabic what I had said. And I said, I'd like to send him a copy of this book so he could see what his wife and son are thinking these days and how they're doing. How do I do that? And I heard Omar ask his mother that question, and I heard her laugh in the background. And she told Omar, she said, well, tell her just to send it to Osama bin Laden in Pakistan is all I know.
Jeez.
Yes.
Were you ever approached by Homeland Security or the CIA after these interviews?
No, I was not approached
okay.
by them.
And
no.
Still to this day, nothing, huh?
I was not approached.
I would have expected them to be all over you.
Well, I suspect they read the book.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, but I'd want
that.
Your notes if I were them. You're not going to give them up, but still, I want that. Okay, so they still believe he's alive.
Well, Omar listens to all the audios for me, because when I hear they've come out, and you'll have the, you know, translation that will come out, and they'll be pondering over here, is this him or not? And I will call Omar, and it's painful for Omar to listen to his father. Despite the fact he disagrees with his father,
His father want to turn him into a suicide bomber?
Yes.
Yeah.
Despite that, he says to me, I don't agree with my father's actions, but I still love my father.
Are they convinced, and are you convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Osama bin Laden was, part of the entire 9/11 tragedy?
When I first started talking to Omar, he was hesitant about that. Najwa, of course, will not discuss it with me.
Right.
But Omar was hesitant about that. As time went on, I insisted, and he listened, and he looked at everything online to do with 9/11. And he was very, very pained by all of that. He was very upset. And then he admitted that he did not believe it until his father took credit for it. And he said, then I had to believe his own words.
Of course, some say, on this conspiracy end, that mm-hmm. those tapes were doctored, that voices were dubbed in, mm-hmm. that he didn't say what he said. So that, just
adds
fuel. Well,
Omar said that once, George. Not to me, but he had said that earlier. He had done a couple of interviews earlier, very, very light touch, not a book, not an in-depth interview, but he had a couple of television appearances, and he actually wondered about that. He speculated about it because there are so many theories like that in the Middle East. He has heard those from everyone.
Is he concerned about his own safety because he went public with so many things?
Well, I asked him. There were several times when I spoke with him, and I had him to speak with his mother, too. I said, if you feel that you are in danger, then we need to stop this, because no book is worth you, your mother, and possibly your siblings being murdered. And I said, would your father harm you, Omar? And he was stunned. He said, never. My father would never. Now, his father beat him when he was a child.
He beat him?
Yes. He caned the boys. He was really quite rough on his boys, not the girls, but he beat the children. He was mean to those boys, which was such a shock for me when I saw and found out how he was. Omar told me he had the most miserable childhood, that they were frightened of their father. He would take them out into the desert and make them march without water because he wanted them to be tough.
What are they living on? Did the father supply them with cash or?
No, they have had a very poor life.
Okay, so he's not supporting them.
No.
I assume most of Bin Laden's assets are frozen anyway, but I don't know.
That was done in 1994 or 95.
Way back
when
then.
When they were in Sudan, the Saudi government froze all of his assets. Everything. And from that time on, I think Osama bin Laden, he did everything with, donations. They were living off donations from wealthy Muslims, basically, for his cause. But they lived very poorly. I mean, it was a shock to me. There were so many revelations like that, because as he became more and more radical, he took more and more from his family. They would live in a big house, but they'd have no furniture. They had to eat very simple foods. They were not allowed to turn on any cooling, even in Saudi Arabia or when they lived in the Sudan. They were not allowed to use air conditioning. Nash was not allowed to turn on her stove. She had to cook on a little gas burner, a one-eye burner. When they lived in Afghanistan, they didn't even have electricity. Mullah Omar offered to have the electricity cut on at places they were living in, Kandahar, and Osama turned it down because he said everyone had to be tough. Yeah, it was amazing. He would take them out to the desert in Sudan, the wives, the children, even the babies, have the sons dig holes, and they had to sleep in the holes because he said they had to expect that. They had to be tough when they would cry and say we're cold because the desert gets very cold at night.
Plus, you've got those creepy crawly things out there, don't you?
Pardon?
You've got those creepy crawly things out there in the desert.
Which Najwa was terrified of. Poor Najwa. But she accepted all of this. Unbelievable, because, certainly as a Western woman, I was thinking, well, Had I been Najwa, the minute Osama got in his hole, that would have been the end of him. But they do not think like we think in the West. I would react very badly to a situation like that. But she was in her marriage. The husband was the one who made the decisions, and she was quite accepting.
What did you find, Jean, to be the probably one of the most shocking episodes when you talked to them?
Well, two things. One, in general, was how joyless their life was. When you see Osama bin Laden and he's talking, you can tell he's a serious person, and you tell he's certainly not someone who leans to gaiety. But he was so joyless, and he forced his children to be that way. How do you keep a child from who is naturally inquisitive, happy, smiling? How did he keep them from laughing and smiling? He counted their teeth. And if they smile beyond their eye tooth, they would be caned.
Jeez.
They would get into serious trouble. And Omar said it became so bad that his younger brothers, if his father wasn't around, because younger children will emulate, you know, their fathers when they get a little bit older, they'll, you know, rebel. But even his younger brothers would start counting Omar's teeth if he smiled too wide and would run and report him to the father. And for me, that was such a shock to think about, living in a house where all the joy had been sucked right out of that house. And think about having that many little children, but they're not allowed to laugh.
Does Omar have any quest to meet his father?
No, he has never said that he does. But I can tell that even Omar, he's a lovely person. He's very gentle.
How old is he?
But he's very sad. He's 28.
Yeah.
He's 28 now. But I see there's a sense of great sadness. That's why it surprised me when I would chat to him over the phone and I'd hear Najwa laugh in the background, because he told me himself that laughter just didn't occur, even when you're seeing little children running around. Now, that was a shock. And, of course, the other revelation I told you, I was stunned to hear about such cockamamie ideas as taking your entire family out to the desert and making small children sleep in holes and cover with dirt and grass, because you're telling them one day the infidel West is going to attack, we're going to be on the run,
and this
is how you will have to live. And to take little children out into the desert, I mean, how stupid can you be to march children and not give them water in that very dry, hot desert? People die from something like that. So I thought, well, this is a man who's supposed to be so smart, and he was well-educated because his father had his children well-educated. And how could you be someone who knew anything and yet be that stupid?
Well, bin Laden's father was, you know, one of the great constructors of Saudi Arabia, wasn't he?
Absolutely. He started out very poor, came from Yemen, earned the trust of King Abdelaziz, the first king of Saudi Arabia, and became one of the wealthiest men in the kingdom. And the bin Laden brothers, the other brothers of Osama, are very wealthy men today.
Does Osama bin Laden, has he read the book, do you know?
Well, he reads everything that comes out, and I assume if he's reading Jimmy Carter's book that he certainly would. I can tell you what would get Osama. It's not that Omar did this, even though I'm sure he would not be happy. The fact that Najwa cooperated.
Yeah.
He would have never expected that. So, yes, I feel certain that if he's reading Jimmy Carter's book, he's reading his son and his wife's book, because he's still married to Najwa. He would not give her a divorce.
All right, well, we're going to come back with a little bit more with Eugene in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, we'll take some phone calls. You might have a question for her. She has written a book called Growing Up Bin Laden, Osama's Wife and Son Take Us Inside Their Secret World. We'll be back. Hey, you can pick up the After Dark magazine by calling 1-888-727-5505. Great stories there. On our next Coast to Coast program, Bill McDonald joins us. He's an alternative investigator, and one of the stories he'll talk about, the biology of the Loch Ness Monster. Some say Nessie has died. Gene, apparently after we invaded Afghanistan in 2001, most of the bin Laden family, fled to Iran? And, of course, Iran denies they ever had them, huh?
Well, there's a lot going on with that at this moment. The family says they left right before 9/11 because their father ran off and left them. And their mother was already gone. And so that's when they made for the border. And they just, you know, I was shocked. I said, well, my gosh, why would they leave? They said, well, the father left. And they didn't know what to do. And they knew some, there's rumors. They didn't know about 9/11. And most of them were children. There's one that's just showed up in Syria that the Iranians sent. His name is Laden. He's a little baby that was left, and Osama would not let him go with his mother. And this baby was crying and saying, my mother, don't leave me. And Najwa's heart was just broken, but she had two baby daughters, babies in arms. And so she left on September the 9th. These children left at the same time or shortly thereafter before 9/11 occurred, and they have been in Iran since that time. All her children are accounted for now, other than Saad, who was in Iran but who ran away. And they don't know what happened to him. And, of course, we heard reports about 6 or 8 months ago that he had, they believed, our government believes that he was killed by one of the drone missiles.
Right, right. And what about their pets?
Their pets? Well, they left their pets, but Omar had pets, particularly when he was in the Sudan. He didn't have them in Saudi Arabia. So much, unless it was, you know, a goat or a camel, baby camel. But he had puppies in Sudan and then in Afghanistan. But then these men who were working for his father, the fighters, they kept coming and borrowing his pets, and then they wouldn't bring them back, the puppies. And then Omar found out later, he was told in great detail that his pets had been used and had been gassed, that they had tested the gas on the puppies, and it was an accident. I have read reports that people would say, oh, you know, he's just trying to get our sympathy. But actually, there's a little interesting story on that. Omar was talking to me over the phone one day, and he just said, well, that's, you know, I had my pets, but they gassed them. And I said, what? And I said, who gassed your pets? And he did not want to tell me that story. So he's been wrongly accused on that. If people thought he was trying to get attention, I had to basically keep asking and saying, Omar, these sort of things. He says, I can't talk about it. I've never talked about this. And he was so upset to talk about it. But it took a lot of phone calls, and he eventually, very haltingly, told me the story, and it's in the book, about how his pets were taken. And said the fighters took great joy in telling him how his little dog suffered.
Geez. So they had the capability of using poisonous gas.
Absolutely.
My gosh.
I know. I know. You know, as Westerners, we all love our pets. And even though we hear many other stories, somehow or another that brings the cruelty of it home to us, the thought of someone taking a little puppy. And he also told me something that was shocking, that his father had dogs when he was in Sudan as guard dogs, and he actually saw his father pet those dogs. And I know Najwa was shocked to even hear that. I think that was the first time she had heard that story, and the very thought that Osama was petting a dog was a big shock for her, too.
Next up, let's go to some calls. Panama City, Florida. Rick, east of the Rockies, you're up. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Glad to talk to you. I love your show.
Thanks, Rick.
Miss Jean, I'd like to ask you a question.
Yes?
Is there any reason why Osama turned against the West like he did? I mean, he grew up undoubtedly in a capitalistic, you know.
Well, it was a slow process, Rick. It didn't happen overnight. He went to Russia, he went to Afghanistan to fight the Russians.
And we helped him. We helped
him. Yes, we certainly did. He was a hero. Everyone loved him. He was a hero in Saudi Arabia, and he and his men, maybe not by name, were heroes, were greatly praised.
Weren't they the Mujahideen at the time?
Yes, absolutely. Well, when he first went there, he was only doing supplies, and then he got into it, and he got his Arab fighters, which was a separate group. And then once that war wound down, once it was over, then we had the first Gulf War, and that was really, I think, the trigger that got him so upset with the West. Not that he was a big fan of any country that's not a purely Muslim country, but he became so obsessed with the idea that there were infidels on the holy soil, because, you know, Saudi Arabia is the land of Muhammad, And he took that very hard, and he did not want us there. And that was when he had a break with the royal family over his criticisms, and then went to Sudan. And when he was in Sudan, there were things that were happening there, and he got kicked out of Sudan after that. In his eyes, it was all-out war against particularly America, which he sees as the big Satan.
Tell us, Gene, the story of Omar sitting with his father on a mountainside.
Oh, it was amazing that he was the son chosen, and there he is with his father. And his father, he said, was constantly talking into a recorder and was always talking about how he was at war with the West and the things he was going to do. And he said that America and Israel were one and the same, but Israel was the strong one and America was the weak one. And what do you do? Do you go after the strong one first or the weak one? Well, of course, my son, we go after the weak one. And his idea, he told Omar, was not so much all-out war to take us on a battlefield, but it was to bring so much damage to America that it would break our economy. And certainly in the things he's done, we have certainly suffered economy-wise, certainly in 9/11.
We've lost rights. When's the last time you flew, Gene? You know what that's like.
I know. It's just I get furious at Osama bin Laden every time I fly.
Gene, in your opinion, why haven't we gone after Osama bin Laden? Why haven't we just nuked the mountainside and just wiped him out?
Well, I think certainly everyone's hesitant to use nukes. But I believe that in the mountainside, he's in his own element. And Omar says that he used to make those boys get up in the middle of the night and hike from Afghanistan, the Tora Bora Mountains, into Pakistan, and said his father did that several times a week. And he knew every boulder. That he said, no one can catch my father in those mountains. And you know what? That's been proven, hasn't it? Because we had people so close, but were not able to get him. For whatever, there were a number of reasons, because I've read, you know, other books about it, the Kill Bin Laden book and things like that.
Did the wife or the son ever talk about Bin Laden's kidney problems or anything like that?
Yes, I ask him those, all of those questions, everything that's out in the news, all the rumors, I specifically ask. Najwa and Omar swear that he was one of the healthiest men they've ever known. He had kidney stones. He never had dialysis. He never had really bad problems. The worst he was once he fell off of a horse and broke a bunch of ribs. And Omar said when he left his father, when he and his mother left, that he could still out hike his sons and all the men that were with him.
Wasn't he in the hospital somewhere and we had a shot to get him, but we didn't? Did you ever hear that?
No, I did not hear that. I heard that we had several
maybe
times
he was
we
there
were close, but not in a hospital.
Yeah, he was in a hospital, but maybe it was with the kidney stones. I had heard it was the kidney problem.
Well, he had doctors that came to him when he had any kidney problems, but it was just kidney stones. And, of course, you know, that's painful enough, but that's certainly not life-threatening.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. Ann, first-time caller. Go ahead, Ann. You're on with Gene.
Hi. I find this show just intriguing tonight. I'm a first-time caller, and I think my question is probably stupid, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Does anyone know with family or yourself of a time where there's a softness of Bin Laden, or has he been totally just tough through the whole thing?
When there was a what of Bin Laden, I missed that, Ann.
A softness of
A softness?
Bin Laden.
Any kind of human feeling there?
I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay.
From his family, yes, there was. Omar said he used to watch when he was like an older boy, 10 or 12, and he would see his little sister crawl up and down the length of his father, pulling on his beard. And he said he was shocked to see his father so gentle and kind to his little sister. And he told his mother, why is he not kind to me? And Najwa said he was when you were small. So obviously he was nice to the little ones. And he was very much caring of Afghanistan people in the beginning and was so distraught. Najwa said she did tell me a few stories about when he fought in Afghanistan and the things he shared with her. And there were some stories that she shared about how upset he was when he would hear these stories of how the Russians were killing the Afghan women, all of the things that were going on. So there's something in there that comes out on occasion, but it's not visible very often, even to members of his family.
No, you finish.
Omar said that when his father would come home from Afghanistan as they got older, and he would be happy because he was the child who most loved his father of all the children, all of 11. Najwa and Osama had 11. He said his brothers would get angry at him and say, let him stay in Afghanistan. We don't want him to come to Saudi Arabia. And the brothers by that time were so fearful of Osama, they didn't want him at home.
Jeez. If bin Laden died, would the wife, the son hear about it? Would they know?
Probably the same time we did. I don't think there's anyone sending them information.
So they're not on the inside anymore.
No, and particularly not Omar, because the father would be very, very unhappy with Omar. He's been speaking out against his father now for 4 or 5 years, as far as just, you know, like a comment, I'm not with my father, I'm not violent.
Well, how can we trust him, Gene?
Well, this is what I found, because I was a little bit wary in the beginning, too.
You know, maybe he's a disinformation son or something.
No, it's absolutely, I'd stake my life on it.
Don't do that.
I found out that Omar is a man of integrity and a man that will not lie. He never, because I was asked that by producers from the Oprah show who were questioning me about it. They said, how do you know this is true? I said, well, listen, first of all, when you interview any Middle Easterner, the problem is never that they are telling you too much. It's trying to get all the information out. They keep things that might embarrass them from you. But I found with Omar that no matter if I thought it was something that I needed to plunge into, to go deeper, to find out, he would never tell me things to please me, to try to get me to shut up from harassing him, to get more information. He was very strong. He'd say, well, no, I can't talk about that. No, I cannot tell you that. And so I found that if he was the kind of person that would be lying and telling me things, then he would be happy just to feed me any information. But he wasn't like that at all. And the more I came to know Omar, I found him to be actually one of the nicest people I've ever dealt with.
Let's go to Edwardsville, Illinois, east of the Rockies. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Tim.
I wondered if there's any truth to the rumors that the Osama bin Laden family had at least business relations with the Bush family. And I also wondered if any of his, bin Laden's extended family shared his jihadist views.
As far as the relations with the Bush family, Omar nor his mother would not have known anything about that. I don't believe Osama did personally. I believe other family members did, and other reporters have reported on that. So obviously they had information. As far as any of his family sharing his jihadist views, he had, I believe, his sister, who was a half-sister, her husband was very much involved with him, but that was from his mother's side. As far as the bin Laden brothers, I believe in the beginning a lot of people contributed and helped him, but that was before the bombings of the African embassies. After that happened, I think most of them started pulling away.
So we know that Najwa, the wife, still cares about him. What about the son?
I would say Omar loves his father, but not his actions. That's what I feel. Because it's very painful for him. It's not an easy topic. It's extremely painful, and he becomes quite distraught.
Did he talk at all about Al-Qaeda and its growth, its tentacles, anything like that?
Well, he talked about the men training and the men. See, Omar was the son who was chosen by the father to fly with him. There's been so much speculation. How did Osama bin Laden get out of Sudan and into Afghanistan? Omar was the son that he took with him along with 4 or 5 of his most trusted advisors. Omar was on that plane that day. His brothers got very upset, particularly the two older brothers that were in the Sudan that were not chosen. Then Osama chose Omar. He said, I want you to be my second. Omar was the only person who stood up to his father about any kind of violence. Even the men around him that were so tough, they would never say anything. He said they would be stunned when he would start saying, my father, why this violence? Let's live a normal life. Let's go back to Saudi Arabia. And so Omar really was right there. He was able to see everything. And once he became like 14, 15, 16 years old, the revelations and the things he said about the things that were going around his father, everybody thought Mullah Omar, the head of the Taliban, invited Osama there. A lot of people have reported that. Osama did not even meet Mullah Omar, did not even know him, had never had a conversation with him. Another former fighter who had been with Osama against the Russians and who was the warlord, the head of the area around Kabul, was the one who invited them to go there and to live. And he, when he met Osama at the airport with Omar, he gave him a mountain in Tora Bora, said, "That's your mountain." And Osama was so excited, and Omar hated that mountain.
That's the mountain we missed him.
We missed him on.
Yep, absolutely. How about his second in command, Zawahiri? Did they ever talk about him?
Yes, because Omar was around all of these people. He absolutely hated that man.
He did.
Omar hated him. He said he had very little to say to him because there's a story in the book where he shot and killed one of Omar's friends in the Sudan.
And he was the Egyptian doctor.
Yes, who's still alive and we still see on occasion. Yeah. The only one that Omar spoke of fondly was another Egyptian, Abu Hatz, who was, he said, his father's best friend always. And Mohammed, his brother, married Abu Hatz's daughter when they were in Afghanistan before everything in the year 2000. And he was killed in the October bombing.
Some of the brothers have gone on to some responsibilities with Al-Qaeda, haven't they?
Well, there's reports of that, but Omar says none of his brothers are capable of that. He said when he would read that, he would be surprised that it was even said. But all of these boys, the father did not take them. The father ran off and left them. Every one of them ended up just going together as a family to Iran. Had they been anyone doing anything in Al-Qaeda, they would have been with their father. So that seems to be just a rumor that has no basis in truth.
20 kids. That's a lot of kids, huh?
Absolutely. And, you know, all of them are basically accounted for other than Saad.
How many wives did bin Laden have?
Well, he had, that we know of, when by the time Najwa left in 2001, he had married six women.
Six. He's probably married about six more since.
He's
who knows?
Probably married since that
Gene,
time.
The book, Growing Up Bin Laden, it's been out since October. It's all over the place in your website. We've got you linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Thank you. Let's keep in touch. I may use you as a Middle East resource, okay?
Well, I'm here.
All right. Thanks, Gene. For Dan Galante, Miranda Marino, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.